Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Now, right now, I have quite a fascinating author with me. He is Paul Hollis. Paul is an American author of fictional terrorism and espionage. His best-selling trilogy, The Hollow Man series, follows a U.S. government analyst and his partner in an odyssey of suspense across Europe. Paul always had wanderlust, living in 12 states and eventually working in all 50, luring him with the idea of touring the world at someone else's expense. He has lived and worked in 48 countries across 5 continents while teaching companies about growing global implications. And his travel experiences inspire the novels in the Hollow Man series, bringing the streets and villages of Europe to life and offering a unique viewpoint to his mesmerizing thrillers. And I know I'm already intrigued and we haven't even started, so let's bring him on. Welcome to the network, Paul.
Hello, Pat, and thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure, for sure. Before, if you don't mind, before we delve into your books, I'm interested to learn a bit about your work that has taken you all around the globe. What global implications are you most concerned about right now?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. The global implications right now is really a bordered Earth, and what we need to do is really knock down those borders and understand people as people and their own cultures and their own environments, their own beliefs, their own wants and needs. And we will find, as I have found in my travels, that people are generally all the same and want the same things in the end. So that is really the biggest implication that I can see for globalization and having the world as one, as opposed to many entities that are either business related or government related.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree with you.
That's how we're going to get to understand people, and we're going to get to actually drop the fears that we have of other cultures and other countries. Mm-hmm. Is to actually be among them and learn. And that's what we need to do, is to keep learning about the world.
And, you know, I think because you have had that opportunity to see the world, whereas most people do not, and they're just kind of caged in their own little area for an entire lifetime. And so I think that fear festers. If there was some way we can, I don't know, get people out there or educate them to that end, we would be in better shape.
Yeah, I agree, Pat.
Mm-hmm, yep. Well, let's get to your books. You've written 2 books of the Hollow Man series, The Hollow Man and London Bridge is Falling Down. Let's start by giving us a little synopsis or summation, maybe, of The Hollow Man.
The Hollow Man actually begins a time in my life. It's actually based on true events that happened in Europe at the time. And you could very easily see me as this government analyst who is actually tracking terrorists and basically... His responsibility is to understand and learn as much as he can about the terrorism that was kind of was just growing in the early 70s. But what happens is he's no Jason Bourne or James Bond, so he just gets into a lot of trouble, basically. So that's pretty much what The Hollow Man is about, is tracking terrorists through Europe and understanding more about the new implications of terrorism at the time.
Mm-hmm. And the face of terrorism has changed from attacking our leaders to attacking our children and innocent people randomly, and how that places a different level of fear.
It has. Back when I was looking at terrorism, it was very much a political entity, although, you know, there, in general, I'm speaking here, but it was very much a political entity. There was a specific target, there was a specific reason for it, and a specific result was intended. And then then sort of changed through various acts of violence through Europe, and especially you can see this very well in the IRA tactics with the UK is where they sort of started bombing pubs and public places where just normal people go, and they had no thought process of why are we being blown up, you know, sort of thing. So it was really changing to this tactic of, well, let's just get a notification or notice of what we're doing by killing innocent people rather than a political figure. And that really was a changing face of terrorism at the time, and you can see now it's really propagated that way, especially in current times. But when you go after children and you go after innocent people, it really brings home the effect and the terror behind terrorism.
Absolutely, it brings it down to the level of the basic population, and as you say, not just the political leaders. A very frightening time for sure. So you say the idea for this book came from some of your personal experiences?
Yeah, to tell you the truth, I had joined the Peace Corps because I was very much opposed to war at the time, and I just knew that if I went to Vietnam, I would be killed. I just had this feeling. And so I joined the Peace Corps, and I eventually ended up in digging latrines in East Africa, in a place called Tanzania, which was a very new country at that time. But along came a guy in a white suit in the rain, and he just said, "Hey, how would you like to tour Europe as a tourist?" And I said, "Well, that sounds better than what I'm doing now." And What the job entailed was basically a free ride through Europe, do anything I wanted to, say anything, go anywhere I wanted to do, and when they called on me, I needed to do research on a particular person or in a particular event that would hopefully lead to confirmation or negation of an assumption that they had back in Fort Meade or Washington D.C. or wherever it was that they would call from. So, so I needed to collect information, and in those days there were no cell phones, there were no real computer systems at that time to tap into. So, it was really a question of either following people or actually even talking to them in some cases, or studying in the libraries with microfiche and various card catalogs, et cetera, to find the information about particular people or events that were going on at the time. So that's what I was assigned to do. And I really traveled to Europe as a tourist, quote unquote, a tourist, and was paid off the books, and that was my job. It was just doing that, and it was a great time because I was young and invincible, of course, as all young people are, and. So I didn't really know any different at that time, but yeah, definitely no Jason Bourne for sure.
Wow, what an interesting lifestyle! Amazing. Wow. Let's talk about the Hollow Man title. How did you come up with the title for the book or the series?
The title actually comes from a part of the Hollow Men poem from T.S. Eliot, but it has to do with wearing disguises and being not the person that people see all the time. Mm-hmm. So you're just kind of hollow inside, which is what I felt like at the time. It's just hollow inside, and it was really about wearing disguises and tracking people and being someone else who you were not. Mm-hmm. And that was really what that piece of the poem meant to me. So that's where the name came from. And of course, it's probably been a little bit overused now with the movie by the same title, which has a totally different premise, and there are actually a few other books that are called The Hollow Man, but that is where my title came from. It was that specific poem.
Just as a side, I was wondering, how was it for you to adapt to going back to being a regular person and feeling regular feelings and having normal relationships after that kind of experience?
Paranoid would be the simplest answer. It took a long time to be able to trust people, to be able to see them as just regular people and not as someone who was trying to kill me or who was trying to lie to me or anything of that sort. So it took a long time, and I actually only did it for about 3.5 years, somewhere in that range. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like a lifetime of it, but it was enough to leave the scars, yeah.
Absolutely enough to change you and make you look at things differently. And that brings me to what you say, that your writing style is very visual, and now I understand why. Let's just talk about that for a moment. What do you mean by that? And then how do you go about accomplishing that into words?
I try to write a scene as if a person is not watching the movie, but actually inside the movie as a participant, and a willing or sometimes an unwilling participant in the scene itself. So every scene has an authenticity to be for the reader in this case, or the watcher at some distant movie premiere. To be an active participant in that. So what I actually do is kind of imagine myself in there, not only imagine myself in the scene, but me talking and relating things around me of what's happening, what I see. It's more about the senses than the actual words. So it's the feelings, it's the sights and sounds and smells and tastes and all of those things that really bring home to people. It's like, oh yeah, I understand, or I've been there, I've done that, but, you know, that, those kinds of things. So that in a nutshell is how I approach it, and it seems to work because most of my reviews say that it is like putting myself into the storyline, and you get to know the characters through dialogue more than description, and that to me is important as well, so that you're actually listening, just like in real life, you're listening to people talking about what they feel and believe and think and the actions that sometimes do not follow the words, et cetera, you know. So I mean, just all things of you can relate to in real life. So that really is what I get at. What I call a visual writing experience.
Right, and I would imagine it would be a little easier for you than maybe some other writers, because you were there, you lived it, they say write about what you know, and you not only knew about this, you were just so immersed in all of it. I'm sure it just exudes from you, so it's easy to write that way. And you also talk about dialogue, and you like to write dialogue.
Oh, I love dialogue. I actually think dialogue makes the book. It makes the movie, it makes the radio show, it makes the book. Everything that we do is via dialogue these days. Notwithstanding current social media with video, et cetera, but what we do as people is talk, and that understanding is really important to me to get that across to people. So when my character speaks with a let's say an Irish accent, for example, you are there with that, and that's how it comes out. It's not regular English. It is exactly how they would speak. So it's putting you right there face to face with an Irish terrorist, for example.
Wow, and dialogue is not that easy to write. So.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that dialogue is the harder part of writing, but. But to me, it's like the old saying of words and music go together. So it's the words and the description, the non-dialogue parts actually have to be together, and they have to work together. Mm-hmm. But my books are character-driven, not so much plot-driven, but character-driven, so that therefore the dialogue becomes more important in what's going on. And yeah, there's some vivid descriptions of St. Paul's Cathedral or Devil's Island, you know. So, I mean, there are those things too, but but it's really the dialogue that brings it home to people so they can actually be within that scene.
Mm-hmm. I've got it. I like that you say that 80% of your books are 90% true, and I think that probably also helps to make this very visual, and it helps the reader feel like they are there.
Oh, yes, exactly. And they are, the reason I say 80% is true, or 90% is true, is that my memory, after 40 years, sort of plays tricks on me, and I maybe not get everything exactly right, but I was there, and so I just put myself back in that visualization and can understand and can myself then re-react with the characters, with the people, actually. All my characters are with people in sense or other. From back then, I don't take pieces of characters or people that I know now. These were all real people back then, and one or two of them survived, but most of them are probably long gone because of the time sequence. But it's really the characterization that really brings everything home there to me, and being back in the scene.
Mm-hmm. Let's share a bit then about your character, since we're talking about that. Was there a character that was difficult for you to write?
There was the main terrorist, I would say, in The Hollow Man, the first book, was probably the hardest to write because he was not your conventional terrorist in that way. He was sort of a sociopath, but not stereotypically so. I had to kind of separate, in thinking about him, I had to sort of separate what I have learned that sociopath to understand what he was saying. And so at one point, I say that really he was going to shoot me and go about his day. There was I peered into his steel gray eyes and saw something I never expected to see. I wanted to see a lack of empathy. I wanted to see black bottom of fourth world paranoia. But what I saw in his eyes was just a crystal clear sanity of reason and right, and that he really did not think anything about killing me at that point. So that was really a tough thing for me to write about in those kinds of terms, and to put him, to humanize him within this sort of an inhuman kind of a character. So he was definitely the hardest one to write.
Wow, and a little scary for you as well.
Oh, you cannot imagine. You should read the book when you have a chance, because I am lucky to be alive, because I was near death 10 or 12 times and would have died if it was not for my partner, from my MI6 partner, Zita, who is a very strong lead character in this book as well.
Well, let's talk about her.
Well, she was a very interesting lady. She was MI6 agent, a foreign office representative, as they said in the day. She had connections with Downing Street. She knew the Queen. She was very much a lady, and not a lady you'd want to disappoint, because she was also very lethal. I actually still do Skype with her today, since she and I have remained very, very, very close friends. So we don't really talk about the old times, only about the new times. But she was a very tall, athletic lady, very English proper, but very lethal. You did not want to mess with her at all. So she actually has saved my life more than once. I can never repay her for that. But that was my Zita. Yeah.
What does she think about being a character in your book?
She just said, "Just be careful. Be careful what I say and how it comes out." Because she would deny everything, of course. But I don't ever give away any state secrets. It's not that kind of a story about. It's not a Tom Clancy state secret kind of a novel. It's an anti-spy novel, really, because what I do is I carry myself through it as I did as a kid at 23, 24 years old. and not as a super spy. I didn't have any fancy gadgets. I didn't have anything of that sort. No fancy cars like Bond, et cetera. But what I did have was a good brain and a impulsive nature and inquisitive. So and a tenacity really to never let anything go, which really got me into trouble a lot of times. So
now, your main character is Doc, is that, and that is you.
Yes.
And let's talk about the nickname, because I love the story.
That nickname came when I was in high school. I took a job in a mortuary owned by twin brothers, and you know, and as you're a kid, you know, it's like, well, I have no fear of death or anything like that. And so my job was actually to sweep up the embalming room, and it was a huge place and very busy. So there were lots of bodies still there under white sheets, and you know, with either attached or not attached to embalming fluid on the coming out of the spigots on the side, et cetera. But what I was supposed to do was sweep up the place, clean it up, get it nice and tidy after the day's work, et cetera. So one night the third night I was there. I was sweeping up and all of a sudden I hear something behind me, and there's this body is sitting up on the table and he's making noise, right? So it's like, oh my God, this body is between me and that door. So what am I gonna do? So I ran at the body with my broom as a jousting stick and hit him like straight in the chest, and I heard a big thud. He fell off. I was through that door, up the stairs, through the lobby, and out the front door within 3 seconds. So I'm running down the street and I hear this car coming and it's like, and it's one of the brothers honking at me. It's like, I'm not stopping. I don't care. And so I'm running, and so he had to actually cut me off so that I'd stop running. And he said, hey, that was just my brother having a little fun, right, just to scare you to see what's going on. I said, I don't care, I quit.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, my gosh, you can't quit. He said, we owe you money. Just come by and get the money that we owe you. And I apologize, you know, big story there. And I said, no, you keep the money. I don't need it. Not after that. And so he actually... Then he says, okay, can I have my broom back? Because I was still carrying the broom. And so by the next day, this was all over school because these two brothers were very close friends with my wrestling coach at the time. And so, yeah, it got all over school. So everyone called me Doc after that. So that's where the story came. That's where the nickname comes from.
My gosh. Well, that's perfect. Put them in your story, right? I love it. Oh, gosh. Let's talk about your sequel to The Hollow Man. It's called London Bridge is Falling Down. Are the same characters and same true events going on in that second book as well?
They are. The same characters. You'll meet Doc and Sita again, plus a whole another array of folks. All the events are true, with the caveat of true as I remember them. There are two events in the book, so you can actually be there and see the same events that I saw, et cetera. So, this one particular one is about the IRA bombings in the early to mid 70s, in a time when the media called that the Troubles, and so really they didn't really ever call it a war in England. It was always the Troubles. Between Ireland and England, deep-seated religious tones and deep-seated political tones and everything that goes on in the book, but still with all the human characterizations, et cetera, and it's full of action, suspense, and nonstop really runaway action is what I'd like to have in there. So I sort of cut out the dull points for the readers and just gave them this quick reading, fast approaching new world that they come to know and love so much.
Okay, so that is London Bridge is Falling Down. It's part of the Hollow Man series, and now you have a third coming up.
Yeah, toward the end of the summer, I'll have one. The third in the series is called Surviving Prague, and this is about. It also has the same characters, Zita and Doc, and this is where. Zita is actually accused of a murder in Czechoslovakia at the time. It's now called the Czech Republic. But and it's really behind the Iron Curtain. So she's accused of murder and on the run. And so Doc breaks into the country. You know, no one ever breaks into an Iron Curtain country. They always break out or try to. And so that was sort of a novel idea and caught them at the border a little bit unprepared. But at that point, then the case is on. So they were after me as well. Doc needs to actually get to Zita to take her out of the country, or get her out of the country. But it really has to do with, and then we sort of get down to the point of more intrigue and espionage expense excitement. But the end of it is really that they're actually planning to detonate a nuclear warhead in the West, and it comes through Czechoslovakia. Yeah. So that's the premise of the story. I won't give away much more than that.
No spoilers. Yeah. And then will there be more books after the third?
I don't plan any in the series unless people really beg for more. Mm-hmm. There is another one that I could write, but I was hoping that possibly I might be able to get onto something else, another genre or another spy novel of some sort. But right now I'm not looking much past the surviving product event of the third installment.
So. Okay. All right. How easy then or difficult, I would imagine there would be somewhat of a challenge to kind of maintain that story arc across these three books.
Each of the characters grow as we did in real life. We grow over the sequence of the books. For the main characters, it wasn't really hard at all because I know the two of them so well. So I was able to maintain and progress with their understanding and enhancement of life, and the other characters, almost all of them except for the voice on the phone that I talk to in Fort Meade all the time, were all different characters. So they in themselves were easy to put together in one book, whereas Doc and Zita had to be across the bounds of all three of them and actually grow and change as that time went on. So that was really the difficulty, but really not so much for them because I knew them so well.
Right. So what is your hope for readers as they read your books? What goal do you have in mind for them?
Well, first of all, I'd like them to come away understanding a little bit more about the world. My message in the books is really simple, as we've mentioned before, is to get out, see the world, broaden your perspective. I've lived in some wonderful places, London, Brussels, Paris, Apollo, Hong Kong, Anchorage, and many, many others. And those experiences have really, I think, helped broaden my perspective on the world and to understand that people are people no matter where you go, and you will find massively incredible people everywhere you go, and you'll find jerks and that as well. It depends on really what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. But really get out there and see the world and understand it for yourself, and don't take anyone else's idea, and don't assume the worst. And go and meet and see these people in their own environments, in their own cultures, in their own and see their own animosities and ambitions and motivations, etc. And you'll understand the world a little bit, and yourself. You'll understand yourself a little bit better too, as well. So that's my main message on these books.
Wow, that's great advice. Thank you for saying that. Thank you for sharing that. And your book trailers are awesome as well. Give us a peek into how those came about.
Having retired from IBM, I grew up kind of with technology as well way back when, so I'm very comfortable with video, and in fact I was responsible for the worldwide program of video surveillance for IBM in the end, but So I'm very keen about technology. So it's very easy for me to put together clips and music behind it to actually show what was happening at the time and how fearful people were and how they sometimes would react as they did in the second video for London Bridges. So they just came about by my efforts to portray the books in a 2-minute trailer, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, very compelling. You did a great, great job.
Thank you.
Well, as we begin to wrap up then, is there anything that we did not talk about that you would like to bring up?
Oh, gosh, no. I appreciate you having me on. It's been a wonderful experience, and appreciate you letting me share my experiences and my books with you all and your listeners.
Well, thank you. I was looking forward to this. So let's share with our listeners where they can learn more about you and where they can purchase your books.
My books are e-books, and they are also paperbacks. You can find them very easily on Amazon, the short answer. You can get the electronic books there and just look for the titles of the book or my name, and you'll find them there. You can purchase them. I'm happy to actually sign one for you if you wanted to go that far to do that. Send me an email and say you'd like to have a book, and I'm happy to sign one for you and send it off to you that way as well. But they're quite available. Both are our number one Amazon bestsellers, so they're very easy to find out there. So I would recommend starting there.
All right, and your website is thehollowmanseries.com.
That's correct, yes.
All right, folks, so we've got The Hollow Man Series written by Paul Hollis. Head over to thehollowmanseries.com. Paul, what a pleasure to learn more about you and your exciting life, and I'm glad you're home safe and sound and are able to share this with us. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate being here.